minute as we're coming back in. Elliot's right here. I wanted you to meet Wayne, who's right here. That's Elliot in the black sweatshirt. So both you guys are in Brooklyn. It's Tyrone Stevenson's executive, who's coaching. And if you don't know the guys sitting around you, you should meet them. We're kind of all in the Northeast. I know most of you guys because most of you are coaching alumni. But if I haven't had a chance to meet your team, I'd love to say hello and do that. Some of you asked about the next event that we're doing. We don't have that set yet. I just scheduled an October 22nd event on my new book, Ignite, that's coming out. So it's going to be the Ignite Seminar, How to Spark Immediate Growth in Your Church. So it's a seminar about, okay, if you've been stalled or if you just want to go to the next level, what do you do? And I'm going to teach you a proven strategy to break that next growth barrier. That's coming up on October 22nd. I'm going to premiere that on October 1st if we get it worked out up in Connecticut. Yeah. And then I'll be traveling around to do that a little bit later. But Carrick is going to be doing some Activate stuff and some small group stuff if that's of interest to you. So just keep an eye out on the email. Apparently we've been known to send an email or two. And
you think?
So you can hear all about that. My latest resource is the ministry seminar. I don't have any of those here today because it's brand new, but you can buy those online. And Steve, what are you doing next? You got any events coming up?
You know, I really don't. Thank you for asking. I just finished doing this capital campaign, how to do your own capital campaign. I did one in Atlanta and one in Dallas. And I'll be doing them again about this time next year, in May of next year. So
yeah, so maybe we can get him back up to New York in May.
Yeah, here's the things I do is I do on-phone coaching, if you're interested in that. I do that more than the seminars like Nelson does, and then I do capital campaigns. Every once in a while I'll do something like this for a friend.
Yeah. So the phone coaching, we'll say a little bit more about what Steve does. He does one-on-one coaching by phone, and that's at a certain level. So you know, if you're in a $3 million capital campaign or more, if your church is 1,000 or more, that's probably where he's best suited. I do coaching by phone, but I do it with a group. And some of you are going to be in that. I mean, a lot of you have gone through coaching, and some of you are in the new coaching network as well. So we'll say a word about that maybe at the end today for those who might be interested. Mark, are we good out there? Is everybody back in from the – there's still a line at the bathroom? Okay, so we got one person coming in. Okay, grab something to eat. Let's give a welcome back to Steve Stroop.
Guys, if you look on the bottom of page 2, I've given you a resource to get an offering envelope service that mails offering envelopes to your people. And that's the Lifeway folks. They will mail that to you. What you do is you send them an update every month of who has joined your church. We only send envelopes to the members because they said they were going to give, so we're just making it easy for them to do what they said they were going to do anyway, okay? And their claim is that if you go to the offering envelope being mailed to your people on a monthly basis, that your income will go up 8%. Now, guys, how would you not do that? And so that more than obviously pays, I forget what we pay for that, but it's nothing. It's just real, real small amount that you pay per person on that thing. And it's automated, and it just happens. It's a reminder to everybody. And there's a lot of folks who like to sit down at their desk. They're not giving online yet, but they like to sit down at their desk, you know, once a month or twice a month and write out their bills. And they will write out their check to the church and just put it in that business reply envelope, which obviously makes it very, very easy. I can't tell you the number of those that come in every week. So let's look on page 3 on our syllabus. We're talking about receiving an annual offering. We also take up an offering every December. Guys, there's a reason why in your mail you're solicited by all these nonprofits every December. For some reason, that's when people give their big gifts. A lot of folks who own their own business, that's kind of when they know about what they're going to make for the year. People get in a more generous time. They're getting Christmas bonuses. They're getting end-of-the-year bonuses. I know in the New York area, some of those bonuses come in January or February, and so you may want to change when you do your annual offering. But sometime during the year, take an annual offering. Now, here's what we do in the annual offering. We just say our goal for our annual offering. We call it an annual offering. We don't call it a missions offering because we don't want it to necessarily be limited to that. But for the most part, our annual offering is a list of mission initiatives or one-time initiatives in some of our ministries. So we might like send $50,000 to Ghana to do water wells. We may send $25,000 to South Africa and our partnership there to help with a hospice that's there. And we just list everything. And we've got partnerships with 20 churches in 10 different nations. And so we'll try to touch all of those nations. So all of our people who travel to those nations to do mission trip, they see a passion area somewhere on there. And then a couple of years ago, we started a new thing called the Home Point Initiative, which is helping equip families to do better in marriage and help them do better in discipling their own children and everything else. And the startup for that was about $200,000. And so we included that, a portion of that, in our annual offering. And so you can make a laundry list. But what we do then, for in our situation, we take it for the whole month of December. So think about this, guys. We're taking general offering during the whole month of December, obviously, on that offering envelope. We're taking this annual offering, and there are separate offering envelopes in the chair racks, and our envelope mailing service sends out a special annual offering envelope in that monthly mailing for December. And then we're taking up the Christmas Eve offering as well. And that sounds like a lot of offerings, guys, but the folks will give to that because it's different pockets, okay? So we'll bring in most years close to $1 million extra money. If you want to just kind of compute that, our annual budget is $15 million. So about 8% more in you might figure that you could bring in an annual offering if you took it up. And what happens is we've got this offering envelope that says missions on here. Usually 80 to 90% of what's in our annual offering that take up in that month of December goes to our missions budget. Okay? Everything that goes into the blank that says missions goes into our mission budget. And then 10% of everything that comes into our building fund most years is tied over into our missions budget. Our capital campaign this last time, 20% of it went to our missions. So we've got four sources. We no longer have missions as a line item in our general budget because we don't need to. Because our people, they gave $15 million to general last year. They gave $3.2 million to missions with those sources, okay? So that's a pretty hefty thing. It hasn't hurt us. It's created new money. It's still on our envelope because it's a way. About 700,000 of that 3.2 comes from the envelope. It's just a source. We have four sources: our capital campaign, the blank, 10% of the blank on building, 20% of our capital campaign, all 100% of this, and then the rest of it is designated gifts that come in to missions. Well, we always are, but yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if you're not in the middle of the capital campaign, then your funding would be coming from this and this alone. See? Yes.
How about the reverse question? What if you've got the culmination of a capital campaign coming in December? Would you still do that?
Thank you very much. Every December, we do an annual offering. In the years that we're kicking off a new capital campaign, the annual offering is the one-time gift to the capital campaign. It's a great question. But because we're giving 20% of it to missions of our capital campaign, it's the one-time offering in December of that year, usually is the 20% or the 10%, whichever percentage you decide you can do. And guys, by the way, if you're doing capital campaigns right now and you've never tithed any of it over to your missions, I would suggest that you just start with 10%, okay? But what it does is it takes the edge off of a capital campaign, and all your people saying, why are we raising all this money for a new building? We ought to be giving to missions. It gives them an opportunity. And by the way, for your folks who say, we ought to have more money in missions for in our general fund, we say, look, there's a blank on your envelope. You can give as much money as you want to missions, okay? If there's not enough money going to missions, it's not because the board didn't set enough aside. Every church member has an opportunity, if they wanted to give 100% of their offering to missions. So you give as much as you want. You know, the people want the church to give more. They don't want to give more. They want the church to give more. Yes?
I'm wondering how you distinguish between the tithe and their offering.
Okay, the question is, how do we differentiate between tithe and our offering? When I'm asked the question, and sometimes I'll initiate, but most of the time when I'm asked the question, how much do I put in each one of these blanks? I say, this is threshold giving here. This is Spirit-led giving here. And so I'm going to encourage you to give 10% to the general fund And then above and beyond that, you'd give to the general fund, I mean the missions fund, or to the building fund. Now, if somebody divides theirs up, you know, 33, 33, 33, I don't have any problem with that. I'm just, when people ask my opinion, I tell them what I do. I give threshold giving here. I give 10% of my personal money here. And when I give to building and missions, it's above and beyond that. But that's just a personal testimony. I don't have a Bible verse, proof text for that. Yes.
Are your endowments funded through estate planning only, or do you provide opportunity to fund an endowment through regular giving?
Okay, the question is about endowment. Let me give you my personal opinion on endowment. It's okay if you disagree with it. I think endowments, except for very few things, is a negative in the church. Because if a church has an endowment, what it means that that you stop having to pay attention to the customer, okay? And I think parachurch organizations, as well as churches that have large endowments, they don't have to operate in an efficient and effective way. And I think it works against you. Now, the exception I would make to that is I would like to establish an endowment for starting new churches outside of our church. And that makes sense because it doesn't affect raising money to sustain my church and keeps us lean, mean, and hungry. But we do not have an endowment right now. We are considering an endowment for planting churches, none of which money would be spent to operate our church. Yes, sir. All right. Let me jump over to another topic real quick because we've got limited time. I've already mentioned the fact that I think that about the Christmas Eve offering, and I've already mentioned the fact that you ought to limit special offerings. Our only special offerings we have is we have the annual December offering, we have the Christmas Eve benevolent offering, and then once every 3 years, we have a capital campaign. Those are the only special offerings. The rest of it's on the offering envelopes, general, missions, building. Yes, sir.
Guest speakers, you don't take a special offering for them?
Question is, guest speakers, do I take a special offering from them? No, I tell them how much I'm going to pay them when they come. We write them a check. Mm-hmm. You're going to nickel and dime yourself together. And you get a winsome, charismatic speaker come in and take up an offering. He may take up more money than he needs, and it takes money out of what you need. Okay. I mean, a guy come in to do a speaking engagement, there's a value to that. Find out how much he charges. Pay him the fee if you can afford him. But don't let him come in there and suck the money out of your church. It just doesn't make any sense at all to me. Okay, that's my personal opinion. Let's talk about developing a strategic budget. First of all, you need to project your budget. There's two ways to do that. One is a numerical projection and the other is a per capita projection. Guys, it scares me to death to think about how somebody sets a budget. One way you do not set a budget is based on how much money you need. Okay? You don't say, well, gosh, we need $1 million to operate. We only brought in $100,000 last year, but we need $1 million to operate. Let's believe God. Let's have faith and believe God for $1 million budget. I think that's foolish. My biblical principle is a man does not go out, start a tower he cannot finish. He does not declare war if he doesn't know he can win that war. Okay? The best way I know to project a budget is to figure out what your history has been. So let's just say, for example, that this year you've brought in $100,000. The next year you bring in $150,000. The next year you bring in $200,000. What do you think your budget ought to be next year? Oh, this is a smart group. Okay. $250,000. Why? Because we have a track record. We have a pattern. You say, yeah, but we're going to start this new stewardship thing. And, oh, we're opening up a new auditorium, and so we're going to bring in a lot more money. When you do, these numbers will go up, and the following year, you get to go up on your projection. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Big deal, guys. This is basically a $50,000 a year increase is what this is. It is a numerical increase. And by the way, this is not your budget. This is your actual giving. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your budget was the last 3 years. Do you know what a budget is, guys? A budget says, if we bring in this amount of money, this is how we're going to spend it. It's a guess. You never project based on past budgets. You always base it on past actual giving and the numerical increase from year to year. Never, let me say it again, never, let me say it one more time, never use percentages to project your budget? If I had to guess, 90% of the people in the room are using percentages right now. You say, our budget went up 50% last year. Yes, that's right. You went from 50,000 to 100,000. Oh, that's 100%. I'm sorry. Let's just go with that. Our budget went up 100% last year. So we're going to figure it's going to go up 100% this next year, which means 200,000. No, it's not. It went up $50,000, and so it's probably going to go up $50,000, not 100%. It's like people projecting their growth. Well, we grew 50% this year. We had two people, and now we have three. No, you didn't. You grew by one person, and based on what I see, you'll probably grow by one person next year, too, not 50%. Okay, you guys, stay away from percentages on your growth. Go with numerical increase. And you're going to see a pattern. You're going to see a pattern. And by the way, if your income did not increase last year, it's probably not going to increase this year. You don't raise your budget just because it's a new year. You base it on numerical increase historical pattern. Now, I will say this. If you're in a rapidly growing catalytic state, you may not have a very long history, and you may have to go off of just last year or just the last 2 years. But the safe thing for me is what I do is I'll look at our annual income, and I'll find out that this year we went up maybe $625,000, and this year we went up $750,000, and then this year we went up $500,000. And what I'll do is I'll take these three, and I will average them over a three-year period, and then that's what I will project for the numerical increase, because every once in a while you can have a big hit in here of a large giver that came in here and somebody's aunt died, but you know they don't have that many aunts. You know what I'm saying? And so you want to be aware of that. And so I want to do a couple things. One is if I get a very large single gift, I want to make an asterisk there and I want to subtract at least a half of that out when I make a pre. Now, if I get a large gift because a person makes a large annual income, I can leave it in there. But if I get a one-time gift because somebody's had a relative die or they sold out of their company or sold their company, I'm not going to get that every year. And so I'm going to either take that money and put it in a designated account for one-time expenditure, or I'm going to leave it in the general fund, but I'm going to make an asterisk there and I'm not going to increase my budget by that much because I know I can't count on that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So numerically. The other way to do it is per capita increase, and per capita is real easy. You take your average attendance, and then you take your annual income for that year, let's just say for argument's sake that it's $400,000, and you divide that and you come up with your per capita giving of whatever, let's just say it's $23.10 per person per week. You say, well, Steve, what do you count in your attendance? It doesn't matter. Just count the same thing next year. Okay? You can count all the adults in the auditorium. You can count all the adults and the children. But figure out, based on what our average attendance was for the whole year, you say, do we include Easter? It doesn't matter. Just do the same thing every year. And then what you do is you do the same thing you're doing with the numerical. You just figure out what your growth is. Okay, we were going 250, then we had 350. And so what we've got is we've got 100, and so you do the average and say we're increasing by 75 people a year, and if our per capita giving is 23.10. Now the other thing you got to do is you got to also do what your per capita giving is doing. Let's say it was 22.07 this year, it was 21.03 here, so we're saying it's going to go up by $1.14 every year is the average, so we'll figure that in as 24.24, and our attendance is going to go up to 475, and then multiply that out, and then you get a projection. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what I like to do is I like to do a per capita giving projection and a numerical increase per year projection. I like to take the two together, average them, and that's usually what I go with in my projection. It offsets them if something's off a little bit. Does that make sense? Yes.
Because one thing worries me about that, when you're growing like people, new converts generally are not big givers.
Okay.
The
question is, are new converts, sometimes it takes them a while for them to learn to be obedient to God in terms of giving. But see, that's true every year. And so your increase is going to reflect the fact you've got new givers and new people coming online. So you got new Christians from 2 years ago who will come online next year.
Right.
to offset the folks who are just brand new givers. Now, the exception of that is if you had real fast, quick growth because of evangelism, you might be a little more conservative. I like to be conservative on my projections because guess what? I can always find something to spend the money on if I end up with a surplus. Okay? And just tell you my heart. Guys, our church has been in business for 30 years. We've had a surplus of giving 29 of the 30 years. That tells you I've been very Republican. I use the word in a narrow sense, very Republican about our projections. Because all in the world is, the budget is a guess that if we bring in this much money, that's the guess part, this is how we're going to spend it. And I would rather say to our guys, go for it, spend your budgets, feel the freedom to do it, rather than halfway through the year, because I was so grandiose naming a budget number that rhymed with the year 2010, to say, okay, everybody's got to cut back. Now, you think about when you say to your staff, everybody's got to cut back halfway through the year. Some of your people, because of the nature of the programming, they've already spent their budget. That's not fair to the guys. And you have whiplashed your staff and your volunteers if every year you're pulling back. If every year you're pulling back because you were too grandiose, let's get real. Let's get an accurate budget that's based on reality, current reality. Now, if you're going to do all these things, going to add the building, you're going to have a stewardship education, you're going to give everybody the treasure principle, and you think it's going to increase your giving by 12%, great. When it happens, the following year, you can plan on how to spend that money. And that's not a lack of faith, guys. You don't get more money because, think about it, you got a guy there that's making $60,000 a year, you're asking him to move toward threshold giving and beyond it. And you say, our budget is $1 million. Or you say, our budget is $10 million. It doesn't change what he's going to give. It doesn't mean anything to him. Okay, it has nothing to do. So you don't think that by when you yell a bigger number to your people that all of a sudden giving's going to go up. There is no connection. There is no cause and effect. It is a tool to help your staff and your volunteers know how you're going to spend the money if it's going to go in. And the more accurate you are, the better tool it is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so that's how we project budget. What do we never use to project budgets?
Percentages,
thank you. That's worth the trip today. Okay. Okay, determining allocations. How do we determine where that money goes to? Let me tell you how we used to do it that just drove people crazy. We used to say to all of our staff and all of our volunteer ministry leaders, dream big. Just don't worry about that. Just dream big and just tell us what you want and what you need this next year. And so they would turn in, let's just go back to when our budget was $1 million. We'd have $1 million projection of what we thought we were going to bring in, and they would make requests about $2.5 million. So then we had this little committee of people that would meet together who knew absolutely nothing about children's ministry, nothing about youth ministry, nothing about IT or anything else, that would take these huge axes and just begin to slash on their budget and then hand back a bloody stump to the staff member and said, now try to do something with this. And they had to start all back over in terms of their planning for the year because they didn't look anything. Does that make sense to anybody? And we would spend 4 or 5 nights, 4-hour nights beating those budgets up, okay? We do it a little differently now. Okay, here's what we do. We take this pie and here's what we know. About 50% of the pie is going to go for staff, okay? If I took a survey here today, 99% of you would be somewhere within 3% of that 50% on staff, okay? Now, there are exceptions. I know there are exceptions in the room. But, guys, we have a volunteer-intensive organization, so we've got to have staff to lead them. And so about half of your money is going to be spent on staff. About 20% of your budget is going to be spent on facilities, some type of building. Even if you're renting a ballroom, replacing sound equipment, all that stuff like that, about 20% on that. About 10% on missions, unless you have made the evolution that we've made, and it takes time, it takes about 3 or 4 years, and have mission as a separate budget. We actually have a full budget for general. We have a separate full budget for missions. I told you the sources. We have 4 sources that fund our mission budget. We have about 12,000 sources that fund our general budget, okay? Those individual church members, all right? But unless you have a different way of raising missions, or you have created this other pocket, you've developed this other pocket, you need it somewhere in your existing budget. And then 20%, guys, is everything else. Cell phone bills, copier paper, utilities, cleaning supplies for the bathroom, youth budget, children. That's not a heck of a whole lot left for all that others, but that's the reality of it. Mm-hmm. Now, can these shift where this is 6% and this is 24% and this is 18%? Yes. And I think during different seasons of a church's life and based on your individual environment that you do ministry in, that will shift those numbers. So this is not set in stone, but I would say you need to be somewhere in that ballpark. Okay? Yes, sir. Okay? Now, here's what I do. I know that my church budget is going to grow next year. Okay? And I know that it's going to grow about $1 million. You notice I didn't use a percentage. And so that pie is going to get bigger. So how do I allocate, especially when I get down to this 20%, when I've got youth budget and children's budget and utilities and janitorial supplies and all that, how do I divide that up between all those ministries? Well, now that I have determined that it's $1 million increase, because I've done my numerical projection, I've done my per capita. Let's just, if you're a situation where you've got $1 million budget, just say your budget's going to go up $100,000, okay? It's just all relative, isn't it? Now I want to put a percentage on it. Anybody got a percentage on that? What's $1 million of $15 million? If my budget goes up $1 million, $15 million, what's...
6%.
Huh? 6%. So my budget's going to go up 6%. This is dangerous. I'm using a percentage, but that's to label what I've already determined. Okay, is everybody clear on that? Okay, so 6%. So if I know my budget is going up 6%, then I'm going to tell my youth minister, you've got the same budget that you had last year, plus what? No, that was a trick question. I'm going to tell them that they've got 3% more. Now here's why I'm doing that. Because there's going to be a new ministry that starts. And if I give him 6%, I got room for no new ministries. I find out that health insurance is going up 30%. Thank you, President Obama. So, no, that wasn't a political statement. I'm just saying it happens sometimes. It does. And I have no control over, that's one part of my staff expense, and I have no control over the fact that that went up 30%. If I give everybody 6%, I can't go up 30% in my health insurance. You see what I'm saying? So I don't give everybody the same percentage of the pie. I give them probably about half of that. Now, I've got a children's ministry over here that's doing such a great job that we're reaching twice the number of children. It's time for us to ramp up. They're going to get a 9% increase, but I can't give them a 9% if I give the youth 6. You see what I'm saying? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to figure out what my numerical increase is. I'm going to find out how bigger my pie is going to get percentage-wise, and I'm going to give everybody about half of that. And then I'm going to take the little bit that I have left. Let's just say, let's work off $1 million so we can do the math easier. It's 100%. Let's just say I'm going up 100,000, which is a 10% increase. So I'm going to give everybody a 5%. It's a 10%. I'm going to give everybody a 5%. I'm going to take the extra money, which is $50,000, and I'm going to distribute it based on where my greatest needs it is. It may be that I really need a new staff member. And half of the budget, 100,000 increase, is only 50,000. And I need 55,000 to bring on the new youth minister. So I'm going to shift some of the money that I would have given to children's over there, and I'm going to be able to do 55,000. See, so I've got money to shift with there. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then what I say, now this is the brilliance of it though. I come to the youth minister instead of saying, tell me how much money you want, and then me beating up and giving you much less and disappointing you and everything else, I come to you and I tell you exactly the number you have. Mm-hmm. I say, you have $38,000 for your youth budget this year. Now you sit down with your youth workers and you plan how to spend that effectively to reach and to disciple young people. That's a lot smoother process. And I'm still going to ask him to plan, but I'm not going to ask him to waste his time. How do you determine what house you live in? How do you determine what car you drive? By how much you make. So doesn't it make sense that you would give your ministry staff members how much they're going to make before you tell them to plan their lifestyle of ministry? Doesn't that make a lot more sense? And then, guys, you know what's wonderful now? We come to our board to approve the budget every year, and a meeting that used to last 4 or 5 nights, 4 hours each, now lasts 30 minutes. Because basically I say, guys, here is the numerical projection of our budget. This is how we got the numbers. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes, it does. We can see how you got there. All in favor, say aye. And, hey, by the way, here's the budget request. You won't believe this, but to the penny, it's exactly that number. Isn't that amazing? So our staff has asked for exactly what we have agreed is going to come in. Can we approve that budget? All in favor, say aye. And nobody's in there saying, oh, they got 32 Coke cans there. You know, I don't think the kids ought to be drinking Cokes. You know, you don't get into micromanagement there, okay? Some of you have been in those meetings. Now, when I ask my staffs to submit budget requests, they're going to submit 3 budget requests. One is going to be their general budget request, which amazingly so is going to be exactly the number that I've already told them that they're going to submit, okay? Number 2, they're going to make a one-time request. Now, what is a one-time request? It is when a ministry has an expense that is not a reoccurring expense. Let me give you an example. Youth ministry needs a new video projector for the youth room. Now, guys, they're not going to buy a new video projector every year, but they need one this year. I'm not going to put that in their general budget because that means their pie gets bigger and they've got that video projector at $12,000 in there every year, although they're not having to buy it. They don't need it as a reoccurring budget item, so they're going to pull it out and they're going to make a one-time request. Okay? Now, here's how I answer the one-time request. I've actually got a sliver of this pie called one-time requests. And every year it goes to different items based on what the staff has requested and what we have approved or denied. So it's the only, it's one of the requests that they can make that's not already set in terms of the numerical value of it. Okay? Yes.
Can that request be for something other than a purchase of a piece of equipment or something like that? Could it be like, we want to have this big evangelist meeting?
Yes. The question is, does it have to be a tangible asset? No, but it does have to be a one-time, one-off. So what they can't say is, one-time request, we want an intern this year. And I say, okay, now wait a minute. I've seen this trick before. You're going to ask for a one-time request of an intern, we're going to give you, and then we're going to fall in love with this guy, and they're going to say, oh, can we have another one-time request, or do we fire this guy and send his family back to Missouri? Okay? No. This is only for one-time expenditure. It cannot be a continual expenditure like a staff salary. Okay? There's a third budget request, and the third budget request is called a ministry expansion request. Ministry expansion. Here is the youth ministry, and they've decided to start a skate church where they're ministering on Tuesday nights to skater kids. But they're going to have programming budget for that. They're going to have an intern to run that. It's going to be a cost from here on out. And what I can do is I can say yes to that ministry expansion budget, even within an existing ministry. And when I approve that, it is actually added to their slice of the pie that year, and they have that slice from now on. Okay? And the fact that I'm only giving people half of the total expansion allows me to allow some ministries to expand faster than other ministries. But this goes away next year because it's now a part of the general fund. This goes away next year because it was a one-time request, and we're back to the same pie the next year. So I'm going to ask you as a staff member, you're my youth minister, I'm going to ask you to turn in your general budget request, and by the way, I'm going to tell you what it is. Second of all, you can make one-time requests, we're going to say yes or no, and you can make ministry expansion requests, and we're going to say yes or no. And usually it's their supervisor who says, who consults us on whether or not those are good expenditures, those last two, because we can't say yes to everybody. I will say this, though, on your one-time request, sometimes those can be funded from last year's surplus if you did a good job of projecting your budget. Question.
Is the one-time request that you deny, are those the things that end up on your designated list?
The one-time requests that are denied can end up on your designated list.
So if somebody
but if they're not strategic, they end up in the trash can. Yes, sir.
You made a statement, I think, a little earlier that I'd like you to clarify. You said you don't let the little departments do their own fundraising. In other words, youth fundraisers, kids' bake sale.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the question is, do you let different age groups do their own fundraising? And the answer to that is no, and there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, think about this. The youth ministry decides we haven't given them enough money of the pie, so they decide they're going to raise money. So they have a spaghetti supper, and so they go to all this effort of decorating the fellowship hall for the spaghetti supper and recruiting all the staff members to serve with in tuxedos the meal, and cooking the spaghetti and advertising it and selling tickets and everything else. And they sell these tickets for $10 for the spaghetti dinner. And somebody comes to a spaghetti dinner and pays $10. The spaghetti itself and the decorations and everything else cost us $7. We have earned a grand total of $3. And the person thinks they've given their donation to the church for the year because they came to the youth spaghetti dinner. Guys, it's a lot of effort, and it gives people a false sense of giving to your church. And that means your youth are not in discipleship, your youth are not in evangelism, your youth are not on mission making a difference in the world. They're raising a lousy $3. And I don't want you to give me $3 for a spaghetti dinner. I don't want you to give me $10 for a spaghetti dinner that's only worth $7. What I want you to do is I want you to give me a tithe on your income. That's a lot of spaghetti. Okay? Now, do we ever make exceptions? Somebody asked me at the break. Yes, we make exceptions. Rules are to serve us, not us serve the rules. So we have a thing called Man Church right now. And we have about 1,000 men that show up once a month on a Wednesday night and praise God together and have a speaker that speaks specifically to their needs. It's an exception of two rules, okay? But we had budgeted some money for them, and it's been such a hit and a success. They came to me and they said, Steve, I know we're in a restrained budget mode right now because of the economy, as you're looking at the economy, but we really could do some great things. Would it be all right if we had a golf tournament? And we said yes to them, and they raised about $40,000 in a golf tournament. Next year when they come to us and they ask us for that golf tournament, we're going to say no to them. We're going to say that was a one-off thing, and we have now, because we're coming out of the recession, we have now included in 2010 Man Church in the regular budget in a more substantial way, so you don't have to have a golf tournament. And we said to them when we said yes, this is an exception to the rule. This will not happen next year. We will include you in the regular budget. Mm-hmm. So you waste a lot of efforts having bingos and spaghetti suppers, yeah. And you don't raise enough money, and it distracts you from the mission of your church. Yes?
This might be somewhat related. It might be very different. But what about for like student mission trips or for scholarships for camp? Are those line items? Are students allowed to raise support for?
Yeah. Four scholarships for mission trips and everything else, we would make an exception to allow young people to have job opportunities so that they can pay their own way to camp. We would deal with scholarships for camp through the designated letter. Camp scholarships for youth children's camps are always on the designated list. That's the best way to raise that money, the fastest way to raise the money. If a kid says, I want to pay for my own way, we may facilitate ways for them to do that, but it's not raising money, it's providing jobs for teenagers. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. Yes, sir.
We recently did a benefit lunch. We're moving from one location to the next location, and as a whole, do you try to stay away from those kinds of things? Because we did it, to be honest, but the service and the food was terrible, and we didn't raise that much money. I was like, man, three titles we gave that, and we're good.
I think you've made my point for me, okay?
Thank you. I just knew something was wrong afterwards. I was like, you know what, three tithers would have, you know, in 1 month.
That's right. It's a lot of effort when you try to raise money with benefits and dinners and stuff like that. It's a lot of effort. and you don't raise a lot of money. You know, people are saying, let's have a big name star come in and do a concert. Most of the time, those concerts lose money.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, have a question back here.
Yeah. We're sometimes experiencing kids will, you know, get involved with the outside missions organizations. Mm.
No, and sometimes you just don't. There are certain crosses you just don't want to die on. There's a. The question was, if we have people who are going on mission and the kids sent out solicitation letters. Here's what we have done though for our trips, because we do have people who go on direct mission trips and then they send out letters asking people to help them. We ask the people not to do that unless they're putting at least 50% of their own money into the trip. And if what we have found, because we've got mission trips going, we'll have 2,000 people who will be on a foreign mission trip this year somewhere. But what we found is that people get on these mission trip junkets, and as long as everybody else is paying their way, they'll go to Africa and they'll go to New Zealand, they'll go all kinds of places. And we find that that thing slows down if they've got skin in the game. So the way they have to sign up for a mission trip is they have to put 50% of their own money down to sign up for the trip, and then they are free then to use our form letters to ask people to give $100 or whatever to their mission trips. And then they don't wear out everybody.
We're introducing a budget for the first time in our church. How do you initially allocate a budget to the individual ministers?
Okay. The question is, if we're doing a budget for the first time, how do we allocate? And the first thing I do is I'd set aside 50%. By the way, the fact that you have 50% for staff makes it real easy to know when you can add new staff. It really does. That's my phone. Sorry about that. It makes it really easy for you to know how to, and that's really interesting because I had the thing off. Okay. So you start there, and then you start with facilities. And guys, even if you're one of these days, if you're in a situation where you know you're going to have to build, I would do 20% or at least begin to move toward 20%. If you're at 10, I'd go 12, 14, 16. Because one of these days you're going to have a loan. And you're going to have to service that loan. And the only way you can do that is if you have built up capacity to service that loan. So let's just say you're renting a school right now and it's only taking 5% of your budget. I would go ahead and budget, though, more than that for your building and put that money in savings, which will be a down payment on your land or your first building. More important than the money, though, you're putting in savings is you're building in capacity to service a future loan. Because otherwise, you're in this school building and all of a sudden you move from a school building where they're giving you a ridiculously low rate to, you know, a $5 million budget, and you can't raise $5 million, but you haven't built the capacity in your budget to service that note. Yes, sir. Yeah, the lender's going to want to see that capacity as well. Yeah, okay. All right, let's talk about...
Finish out the budget, Steve.
Yes.
50% staff, 20% building, then what about...
Yeah, I just think that we ought to be teaching our people how to do outside of themselves. And if you haven't built a separate mission budget, I think, you know, you ought to have something in there for missions.
Right. What about the other pie?
And then the rest of the pie is everything else, guys. And here's the deal. Okay, it makes it real simple. Let's say you got $1 million budget. So we know we got $200,000 for everything else. Then you just got to sit down and you got to say, okay, guys, you know, what's priority here? And what is that? What are those activities that are going to make disciples? Let's remember the purpose of our church. It's to share Christ, build believers. It's to make disciples. Mm-hmm. And so what are those essential activities with that $200,000 that we've got left? And so at that point, when you're just beginning, you're going to have your youth minister submit that stuff. And he, let's just say that he submits a budget of $30,000 of that $200,000. And as you look at it, you say, you know, with just utilities, our cleaning crew, this, that, here, and everything else, I can't give you $30,000. Talk to me about what is the essential things. And that's a tough deal. But once you figure out what that is, then you create those pieces of the pie. And then every year the kid can come back and say, I need to expand my budget, and this is what I would do if you would give me another $3,000. If he makes a good case for that, and you have somebody over here saying, you know, I want to buy the latest technology toy, you know, I've got a BlackBerry and it's working pretty good, but I like to have the iPhone. And you got a kid over here that's about to expand the ministry in a meaningful way. You say no to him, you say yes to him, and that's the way. And over a period of time, it's going to shift in the way that it needs to go for you to make disciples. A guy doesn't get 10% more in his budget just because he's got 10% more kids in the youth program. He's having one camp, and the speaker cost him the same amount as last year. The speaker to his camp is not charging per head. Okay, so you don't get an automatic increase based on your growth. You got economy of volume that's working for you there. And so I want to take that new money. If my church is growing and I'm bringing in new money every year, I want to take that money and I want to place it where it's going to make the most disciples, where the greatest need is. Or maybe it's an area that I have shorted in the past I need to play a little catch up on. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, sir.
How would you handle, once you've established your budget halfway through the year, what gives you vision to shift? How would you fund, let's say, halfway through the year, he says establish your mentor. Where would that funding come from?
Okay, the question is, if I get halfway through the year and the Lord speaks to my heart about something that's not included in my budget, how do I shift? Number one is I can't shift anything because I have made commitments to people, okay? If I've said to the youth minister, you got $30,000, I think it's wrong for me to come back in the middle of the year and say, now you only have $20,000 because God spoke to me, okay? I think that's disingenuous, okay? But the question is, where do you get that money from? Here's two possibilities. One possibility is where you build into your budget unassigned money that's, if you're getting a vision from God about halfway through the year every year, plan for that. I'm just as serious as I can be. You create, I've got a friend right now who has 10% of his budget. And it's just a way of doing it. He's got 10% of his budget that he's got a name for it, but I'm calling it R&D, research and development. And he can use it for something different every year. Or if it's a tough financial year, it gives him automatic margin. He can wait till June to see if they're going to make budget that year to see if he spends that 10%, see? And so you can do that. I have another thing. Here's how to tell you how we do it. I have a designated account called Special Projects, okay? Years ago, 20 years ago, I had a doctor come to me and he said, Steve, I don't want to put my money in the general fund. I'd like to put it wherever you want me to put it. At that time, I didn't have that little designated directed thing. I hadn't developed that yet. So what I did is I created a designated account called Special Projects. Now, we've got some rules about special projects. Number one is I cannot benefit personally from special projects. A check cannot be written to me from special projects. We have a rule out there that under a certain amount of money, I can choose to spend the special project money for those things at my discretion as long as I report it to the board after I do. They see a line item of that. Above a certain amount, I cannot spend that money without prior board approval. I'm not even going to tell you what those amounts are because it's not going to be relative to your situation, but you understand the principle, okay? And so that doctor put that money in there, and he started doing that, and over the years, when anybody comes to me and say, Pastor, I've just had my aunt die, and is there anything that is particular? I say, yeah, if you'll put it in the special project, let me tell you the kinds of things that I do with it. I buy the youth ministry a projector. When we don't have enough camp scholarships, I pay for camp scholarships out of that. When we start this man church that just began, that's just taken off, they get that money. And so, and then the other thing is we've gotten larger. What I've done is I've divided that up, and I've given our education staff a special project, and I've given our operations a special project, and I've given IT a special project. So that not everybody's coming to Santa Claus all the time, see? And they have empowerment now to use some money that's not in the regular pie for those one-on things or those spirit-inspired things. So you can either anticipate it, include it in your general budget, or you can create a little separate thing here. It's almost like a little church foundation thing where you can raise money for that, and then when those things come up, you've got money for that. Okay? That's a great question. All right, let's move on here. You were exactly where we were. On page 4 on C, it says create reserves and vehicles of flexibility. I've already talked about vehicles of flexibility. Okay? Let me talk a little bit about reserve. I really do think it's smart to have cash forward reserve. Sometimes you can create that out of a surplus. Don't always think you have to spend your surplus. I think you need to have money so that if in our situation, we have the potential in Dallas of having 2 Sundays a year completely wiped out by ice. Now that's a fairly rare occurrence, and the fact that people give online now and they're also mailing back these postage paid envelopes gives us a little cushion there, but we could literally lose half of our income on any given Sunday. And so we have that. We're very, very liberal. This is one place we're liberal financially. We only have 2 weeks' income on cash forward reserve. And the reason we only have 2 weeks is I figure that given the things I've already said, we have the potential of only losing about half of our income on any given week. So we'd have to have four weeks of disasters mm-hmm. in 1 year, which we've never had. Mm-hmm. And so in our situation, our cash forward reserve right now is $600,000 that sits there in our bank all the time, untouched, so that if we have a catastrophe, or even let's just say this, because of the recession, people losing jobs and everything, we could have a shortage in any given year of a $15 million budget of $600,000 and still make budget. Now, in the 30 years that I've been pastor, we have never used cash forward reserve because we've been conservative in how we spend and all of that. But it's good to have it there in case we do. I know people who dip into their cash forward reserve on a fairly regular basis, and then you don't have to whiplash everybody by saying, oh, you can't spend the rest of your money the rest of the year, even though half the staff's already spent all their money. You have that cash forward reserve, and that becomes the cushion so that you have longer to turn the ship around, longer to adjust your spending to do that. Some people, instead of having cash forward reserve, they have a line of credit at the bank. And so they don't have money sitting there not working for them, but they have a line of credit at prime rate or whatever it is. The problem is with banks being the way that they are today, I think that's fairly unreliable. I've always told our folks who say that, hey, I think we need to have a month cash forward reserve. I say, well, what we have is a half a month of cash forward reserve, and then we have a half a month of a line of credit at the bank, and we do. So I could borrow another $600,000, which would buy me time if I had to. But I wouldn't rely just on that for cash for our reserve. So you're going to have to figure out what that is for you. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I'm not an accountant, but just sort of roughly, if you've got $600,000 in your reserve and borrow that also, that's a little better than a million out of your $50 million budget.
Yes.
Roughly 6%.
Yes.
So would you say, is that a good rule of thumb? I mean, you have all kinds of sizes of churches here. I think that's a good rule of thumb. We've been asking that very question recently. What kind of reserve do we need?
Everybody asked the question, what is a standard for cash flow reserve? Here's why that's a tough number to give. If you're being conservative on your budget projection, you don't need a very big one. But if you're not being conservative, or you make a mistake, or if you're in a economic situation like you're in Michigan right now, you know, yeah, you need a bigger cash flow reserve than I do. So it is relative, but I'm just going to tell you what we do. Basically, we have access to a month's worth of money if for some reason we had a catastrophic. It's kind of like an insurance policy is what it is. Now, see, I could take that. I'm making about 1.5% on that $600,000 right now. I could take that and pay it on my building note right now. Now, fortunately, I have a very low interest rate on my building. But the difference between what I would not be paying if I put that money on my debt and I make it in the bank, that amount of money is the payment for an insurance policy for something I hope I never have to use. So if you were put a gun to my head and said, what's a standard, I'd say a month. Access to a month's worth of income is my answer there. Yes, sir. Yeah, we've got good banking relationships. We have it with a bank. We obviously, when it gets to be a certain amount of money, we spread it out to various banks. We've got CDs that come due at different times, so every month we have money coming out of those CDs. Here's another thing, is if you have a designated account, you've got money coming in general, but you also have this designated pool. And this is money that people have said, I want to buy water wells in Ghana, I want to pay for a youth van, I want to do this, I want to do that, and all that money's sitting over there, and that money hasn't been spent yet, okay? And so we have that money as well as our cash for a deal. You can actually borrow from this as a general fund. You can't take money that somebody gave for Ghana water wells and spend it on youth ministry. That's illegal. But you can borrow from yourself. You can borrow from a general fund and then pay that fund back. And so in terms of cash flow, we always have more money than just what we have brought in for general and what we have spent out of general. We also have designated accounts, and we have our cash forward reserve. And then obviously you want to try to determine how much money you are feel comfortable with and having actually in the bank account versus the other. But the answer to the question is where you put the money is you want to put your money to work. Obviously you don't have the leeway to invest it in a hedge fund or something like that, but you want to get as much money as you can for your deposits. Also, you got to be careful if you're borrowing money from a bank where you have a deposit, they're going to want most of that money in their bank because that's the way they figured that. We just had a little discussion with our bank when we were putting money out in CDs and other banks, and they said, hey, you know, we gave you this great rate because we assumed you were going to have, in our case, $3 million in deposits sitting there all the time. And, you know, next time we negotiate a rate, it's going to affect it if that thing goes down to $1.5 million because you've got all this money out in these other little banks to try to get a higher rate for another 0.5%. We said, thank you for that information. And because we have a good communication with our bank, we were able to make them happy and yet at the same time still have some money in other banks. Okay, let's go real quickly through what we've got here. Provide checks and balances. Guys, you need policies related to how you collect money, how you handle money, who handles the money, who signs the checks. Just as a general rule, let me say this, that just because you have policies does not mean that they're being enforced. And at least once a year, somebody needs to dip down. I'm talking about walk in the auditorium and see what's happening to the offering plate. Is it being rolled into the roll safe? Are there two people who are always with the offering, a staff member and a non-staff member? Are there at least two people, staff member and a non-staff member, who are not married to each other, who are pulling it out of the safe? Are they, you know, you may have these great policies for checks and balances, guys, you know, but you got to enforce them and you got to do an internal audit every year to make sure that it's actually doing what you think it ought to be doing. We've got policies like I cannot request a check for myself without having another senior staff member sign off on that. Anytime there's a check over $500, two people have to sign it. Just all those standard things. There's a list of general policies in my book, but just to have that. But guys, it's not enough just to have it. We found out that our accounting team had their tables, because of the shape of the room, they had their tables up against the wall, and they were counting money with their backs to each other. And what we found out is that there was a man who'd been on our accounting team for several years who was taking $100 bills and sliding them off the table and slipping them in his pocket. Well, new policy. Now everybody faces one another. Not only do they face one another, but we have three cameras in that room where they count money. Okay? I mean, guys, you just, you know, I was in a church where the minister of education used to take all the plates from all the ushers and walk down a hall all by himself, and they found out he was doing the same thing, slipping cash in his pocket. It's kind of like protecting your house. Guys, there's no way that you're going to have a fail-safe, watertight policy that's going to keep people from stealing from you. But you can make it harder for people to steal from you and take the temptation away from people who are going through tough financial times, who rationalize that they're going to pay it back at some other time. Okay? So make sure you've got checks and balances. But also beyond that, and by the way, if I'm the pastor of church, I never want to be handling the money. And I never want to be writing a check. I never want to be signing a check. If you've got that in your authority right now, please give it away. Please give it away. If I'm standing at the back door, we have a hospitality center where people can come to join the church or to ask questions or get help, get counseling, or whatever. And people are always coming up and saying, I missed the offering plate. When they do, I take it like this, and in their sight, I turn around and I hand it to somebody. It doesn't go in my pocket. It doesn't go in my coat. I don't want to touch the money, okay? And it's not because I have a problem at that point. I've got some other sins that so easily besess me, but it ain't stealing money from the church. But I want to abstain from the appearance of evil, okay? Any questions about checks and balances at this point? Okay. Okay, and then last of all, provide capital for facilities. Now, the way you do that is, first of all, you provide ample general fund. And we've already talked about that, guys. You need to, if you know you've got a building coming up and you're at 8% of your general fund funding your current building debt, you need to start ticking that out. And it's not easy, but when you give half of your increase away with whatever you got left, you need some of it going to increasing the percentage of your general fund that services debt, so that you create that. And then second of all, you establish good banking relationships. You need to have your banker come out to your building at least once a year. And if you get a new bank relationship? In other words, your loan officer who's servicing your banking relationship leaves, then you need that new guy to come out even sooner than that. And you need to have that that banking relationship. When you go to a bank, and I don't have time to do all this today, but when you go to a bank to ask for money for an expansion of your facilities, you need to tell them how much money you need. You need to tell them how you're going to pay for it. You need to show them your audited statements for the last 5 years. You need to show them your budgets. You need to show them all that. You ought to be bringing with you a notebook about this thick so that you're not just sitting there with hat in hand answering questions. You need to be proactive in that, and you need to tell them how much money you want, and you need to tell them the interest rate you want to pay. You say, well, Steve, how would I even know? Well, you talk to other churches that this bank is loaning money to, and you ask for a lower interest rate than any of them, okay? And then that's negotiated. You just don't go and say, how much, I mean, we'd like to have this money, and what do y'all want to charge us, okay? You wouldn't do that on an automobile, okay? So you go prepared whenever you have that, and you have a kind of banking relationship. By the way, bankers are real nervous about fast growth. What they want to do, they want to see long-term history, and they want to see consistent growth. You think you're impressing them by telling them how fast you grew. That will scare them to death, just like a business that grows fast, because they don't know if that's sustainable. And there's a lot of stuff related to the problems that comes with fast growth. I mean, you tell them the truth, but don't think you're going to impress a bank to tell them, you know, that there wasn't anybody here last year and we got 1,000 this year. That's not really what they want to hear, okay? And then conducting capital campaigns. Capital campaigns, at their worst, will bring in one time your annual income over a 3-year period. That's a bad campaign, okay? So why in the world would I not want to increase my income by 30% by having a capital campaign as resources to do the kingdom? And like I said, it doesn't have to be just for facilities. It can be for new initiatives. It can be missions. I can bring in 30% more with a bad capital campaign. And so, you know, just a real quick overview of a capital campaign, because we got 5 minutes left. I'm going to tell you about a capital campaign in 5 minutes. The capital campaign is basically old school, was where you work real, real hard for about 2 months to get everybody to a rubber chicken dinner and try to collect pledge cards from the folks. The other old school was where you got all of your existing church members who were giving to go to everybody's house who wasn't giving and tell them what they are giving and say, I'm not going to leave your house until you give. New school capital campaign is a little more fun than that. It's basically where you cast a vision in small groups in homes with key givers and with potential key givers so that you can answer any question. It's like the lunches and the breakfasts that I have, except you do them with about a group of about 30 people at one time. So you look people in the eye and you say, if the people in this room do not step up, it's not going to happen, okay? And you don't take up any money at that time. You just cast that vision. It's what we call advanced briefings. That's followed up by stewardship education in your small groups so the people know what the Bible says. That's followed up with sermons from you about where this money is going and what God's calling us to do. Followed up by what I call a vision Sunday. And a vision Sunday is where you take the program that you would have given at the rubber chicken dinner to the service where everybody's attending anyway, so there's no effort in getting everybody there. They're already there. You bring the whole thing except for the chicken. You leave the chicken out. But you bring everything else to them, and you cast the vision during that whole service. He said, well, we're kind of a seeker-sensitive church. We can't really do a capital campaign program at church. Yeah, you can. You say to your visitors, man, you've picked the best day to be here because you're going to see today, as we're talking about our people's sacrifice and how much these people in this room who call themselves the people of Lake Point love this community. Mm-hmm. It's a great time for visitors to be there. Now, we're not asking them to pledge, but they're going to see how much our people are willing to do to love that community. And then the following Sunday, all your people come back to make a pledge. And during that week, you've sent them a commitment card. Now, remember, these are people who've attended advanced briefings in small groups. They've attended stewardship education in their small groups. They've had prayer meetings by their small groups. And now they've had Vision Sunday. They come back and you invite them to come and lay those gifts on the altar. And you're asking them to bring a one-time gift, the biggest one-time gift they can, and then pledge about what they will give above and beyond what they would normally give for the next 3 years. And even though you send those pledge cards to them in the mail, they will not remember to bring them to church. So you actually hand it to them as they come in the door. And you warn them at the beginning of the service that you're going to ask all the members and regular attenders of Lake Point to come to the front at the end of service, so now they have 45 minutes to actually fill out the pledge cards while you're preaching your message that week. Now, those are the big pieces, okay? Questions that you guys have before we end here. Yes, sir.
Do you go to the small groups, just you as a senior pastor, or do you
have staff? Okay. When you do the advanced briefings by the small groups, and by the way, the stewardship education is by small groups. The prayer meeting is by small groups. The advanced briefings, though, are different groupings, and they're based on the giving potential. So, for example, I'm with the folks who've given maybe $40,000 and more, and those who are given $10,000 to $40,000, and those who are given from $7,000 to $10,000. I'm in those groups. And the reason I am is because the illustrations I give, when I say you want to bring a one-time gift, say, of $10,000, and then you want to pledge another $30,000 over 3 years, I wouldn't give that to the group of people who only give $3,000 a year, because it would just freak them out and they think my gift doesn't count. And their gift does count on about five different levels. Okay? So that grouping, advanced briefings, is by groupings that we will give based on their giving record. But we want to include everybody in those advanced briefings. Everybody gets invited to an advanced briefing. It's just which one they get invited to. Does that answer your question? All right. A couple more questions and then we're going to have Nelson close us out. Yes, sir. We do back-to-back capital campaigns, and I'm not recommending that to you. In fact, I think it'd be a rare church that would do what we're doing. But here's why we have. Our church was so, I'm going to go ahead and use the word blue-collar in the beginning, that if I didn't collect that money every year back-to-back, I wouldn't be able to provide the buildings that I have provided, okay? It is both. Our campaign is in addition to how much money I've got in my general budget for buildings. It's a combination of my general fund and my capital campaigns that has allowed me to build the buildings we need to build when we've needed to build them. All right? And people ask me all the time, say, how can you do back-to-back capital campaigns without your people getting sick of it? And I say to them, our people actually believe it's more blessed to give than receive. And so they're having a blast. The other thing, they would think something was wrong with our church if we didn't have to have a capital campaign, because it means we're not growing, okay? And so, and the other thing is, nobody's forced to give to the capital campaign, so who's mad? I mean, you're either giving because you want to or you decided not to, so why would you be mad, okay? I'm going to leave something on the back table that's free, and this is called an income facility projection. And what it is one of the churches that I've consulted, and it shows a spreadsheet of how they plan about what their budget is each year, what percentage of that budget is going to the debt service, how much they're going to raise in capital campaign each year, what they're spending to rent their current facility, what they will spend when they ever they get a building note, and it shows that at the end of two capital campaigns, they are able to pick up their building payment out of their general fund. And if you don't have a chart like this, guys, it's hard to plan. This is just to give you an idea of what you could do. And then it's got all the assumptions at the bottom. By the way, if anything changes over here, everything has to change over here. But what it does is it shows what the surplus of the deficit each year is and the cumulative surplus, and it shows how a church who's renting a school building can get into a $10 million building over a period of 8.5 years. So I think this would just be interesting. If you don't have a tool like this, you know, it's something you can create, and if you can't create, we can help you create. So I just leave that'll be free. Nelson, I'll turn it over to you.
We'll unhook you there.
Oh, thank you.
What we'll do is we'll give you that free resource in exchange for your completing this form for us. This is a feedback form. Steve asked if we could print these up. And this is a free